Did you watch that Fallout trailer, by the way? The Fallout show. It's Jonathan Nolan.
They're going to ruin it, right?
I don't know.
Unlike the Cowboy Bebops and stuff, which were very much anime, and one, Fallout was a video game, which had a very good story, but it was a loose story.
Loose story, that's the thing.
So you can take liberties with it,
yep,
and not tick off the fans. I actually like a lot of the elements, but except for when they show the Vault Dwellers. They are trying to make them look cartoonish.
Yeah.
Because it's very, like, so.
But they're supposed to, like, look clean compared to the others.
Yeah, and bright colors, right? Because, yeah, like, that's what it was when you were in the vault. Like, it was very bright colors, and then you go out into the apocalyptic wasteland. It's very muted, and they've copied that. But it's kind of hard to do that because people aren't bright white. Like, yeah, it's, like, yellowish tones. They're almost cartoons, yeah, in the game.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of is a little bit of a struggle. This reminds me, it could have an element of Firefly to it.
Yeah, could.
It's a little cheesy.
Which I'm cool with. Firefly made that work real well.
But Firefly wasn't anything. It didn't start off as being, yeah, something.
Yeah, it was its original concept. But
which, side note, I think if in Cowboy Bebop they would have just copied Firefly in some ways, it would have been a better series. I like this.
But it's the guy who did like Westworld and worked with his brother on a million things, from Memento, one of my favorite movies, to all the Batman series.
That movie was good.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Memento in like 20 years.
Oh, dude, rewatch Memento. It's so good.
I think I own it still.
You didn't watch it?
When I say I own it still, I think I own it. I might own it digitally. There's a lot of things that I own on DVD that I just don't know where, like, the DVDs are packed away and I just never.
Yeah.
I love the Fallout games. There's just...
From the style to everything, man.
The
I love
style...
It.
They never did make an MMO, right? That died.
It's not an MMO. They made a multiplayer game that I think had max 24 people on a server, and it was absolute trash. So
Fallout was one, though, that I thought would have been an amazing MMO if they could have done it right.
Yeah. I mean, still could be, technically. They haven't actually done it. They attempted with a small scale version, but it failed.
Yeah. This could be good. I think I'm excited for Fallout as a TV show.
It's got a good director. It's got some good actors in it.
Yeah.
The trailer makes it look like they are staying true to the lore, at least, you know, what species exist and stuff. So.
And I do think that the framework of the game allows for a lot more open world. And
you could be from any type
Earth.
Of vault, and that'd be completely different. Yeah, you could be in any part of the U.S. You'd be completely different than what the games are, because that's how it is.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they were vaults all over the world.
There's vaults all over. Yeah.
Hey, you want to change things up? You just go to you follow a different character.
That's what they did in the games. One was Boston. One was D.C. You know, they can do whatever.
New Vegas.
It was Las Vegas. Yeah. 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 They could do anything. So I guess you probably wouldn't want to. Do those three specifically, but yeah.
Probably. I know you can't really tell, but we are amped up on McDonald's sauce this week.
Oh, man.
Man alive, that's some good stuff. That's some good eating, right, Griff?
Oh, man, I've heard that campaign is not doing too well, surprisingly.
I think we talked during the last podcast. Hey, we think we're suspicious of this, because why all of a sudden... Now, Taco Bell doing this, but there's no McDonald's at Taco Bell. I think that would get you sued.
Yeah, Taco Bell would be a better candidate for this type of marketing thing, but yeah, that's not how this has played out. It's not like McDonald's came up with the idea.
This is true. But you know what? You heard us talk about nerdy stuff at the top. That can only mean one thing. It's time for The View. No, wait, that's not right at all.
Oh, God.
It's the Lighthouse IT Solutions Podcast. I'm Matt Almadier. I'm sitting right across... My friend Griffin, I think we got a lot to kind of talk about.
Surprising amount of cybersecurity news. We can hit some of that stuff first. I mean, there was a few pretty large ones. One is a bit ironic.
We talk about CISA a lot, and these are the people that help us stay secure. Now, what I do love about having this type of discussion is we talk a lot about breaches being when, not if. You need to be prepared, because it's when, not if.
Yep.
And I hate being a doom and gloom type of person, but the reality is, it's when, not if.
I mean, you only have to be wrong once, basically. Hackers, they'll get in because you messed up one small little thing.
They get unlimited tries.
Yep.
We have to be 100% all the time. And what I think is interesting, so we never really covered the Avanti exploits because Avanti is a very much an enterprisey organization that makes a bunch of different technology products. But we're a small business podcast, so we tend to focus more on things that are applicable to us. But there's Avanti VPN appliances that exist that have had vulnerabilities. And what it looks like is that the vulnerabilities in these Avanti appliances allowed an external threat actor into an area of CISA who's responsible for helping us establish good best practices for security.
CISA is a government agency. It's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency.
Every October.
Yep.
We do the National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. CISA. They're the sponsors of it.
Correct.
A lot of the things that we tell you are based on CISA's guidelines. There's a lot of frameworks that are based on it, right? So I think we can point fingers and laugh and do whatever, but this really shows you this is when, not if.
Yeah.
We need to have serious conversations about, let's not point at the government on this. Their job is to be cybersecurity aware. We cannot be 100%.
CISA's cybersecurity alerts and advisories page weirdly doesn't have their issue, though, on there.
That is kind of interesting. I think they were able to remedy it fairly quickly. And it was access to, there was only two systems that were affected. Weirdly enough, they were just more of like information sharing sites to help government entities be able to share best practice. Like it was like a portal of basically was the big thing. And it had access to tools as well that you could use. So I'm not going to say it wasn't a big deal, but the purpose of us having this conversation is to say, listen, if you're sitting out there and you're saying it won't happen to me, I need you to understand that it can.
Oh, yeah.
And I've lived a large amount of my life trying to do our sales process to talk about security without inciting fear. But I'm also seeing there's more and more apathy. We talked about one time about privacy amongst the younger generation and security, and they just don't care about it because they're overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, grown up on the internet, so...
You're going to get hacked.
Yeah.
That's just a fact of life. So I shouldn't do anything to protect it because my data is already out there. It's not a good way to live life.
Hmm.
It's not a good way to run your business.
That's right? Why you see a lot of advertisers now that are all about, you know, deleting your online personas and histories and that type of thing.
I did see like a comic strip. It was kind of dark, but it was funny to me because it was like Grim Reaper comes and it says, are you prepared or are you ready or something? He's like, just a moment. And he shows up at the computer, lights it on fire, and he says, okay, let's go.
Yeah, I'm ready.
I don't think that exists anymore. I don't think anybody cares. And you can do a lot of things right, and you said it. We have to be 100% all time, which is impossible. They just have to get it right one time.
Yeah.
They get unlimited chances.
That's why it's win.
We're playing a terrible game. And that terrible game... We are doing, like, I got good news about that, by the way. Like, not just, hey, that CISA got this. There's a lot to learn from there that it's when, not if. But the cybercrime industry, gangs have had a pony up, like a victim rate, based on some research I'm seeing, is hit an all-time low.
Nice. Is that because people are...
Just in a five-year span. They're not paying. They're not paying the ransoms.
Nice.
So I think in 2019... 85% of victims that were ransomed, 85% paid.
Wow.
That number is 29% based on current research. I guess it's technically 23.
People putting more stock in the idea that you need backups and whatnot, and they're really
there's a lot of things. There is the, yep, we are doing more and more right. And then there is also a decision to not pay these people.
Yeah, because you're only, you know, funding more issues later on.
Yeah, yeah. That's great news. I'm going to follow it up with bad news. The ransomware industry grew financially. Because here's what we're seeing now. We're seeing this new trend, and I think we've talked about it on here several times before. It's not just about holding your data captive, encrypting it, and using ransom for you to pay to get it unlocked. Now what they're doing, because they know there's a chance that you will be unlikely, there's 81% chance you're not going to pay.
Yeah.
They're now stealing your data. They steal it first, so then they can extort you. So they can say, listen, you can pay. We promise to delete the data and decrypt your current systems. But if you ignore us, we're releasing all of this data out in the public.
Oof.
So that means when they are successful, they are hitting people up for seven figures on average now.
Yeah, so much bigger.
So now, basically what we're seeing is they're not getting as successful, but when they are, it is much bigger payouts. In fact, the 2020, what we would call claimed losses, because it's really hard to figure out how much the industry is, right? Because you have to file a complaint, grew $2.5 billion. So effectively, we're looking at the ransomware industry growing yet again from 2019. Let's use that number again. That was a $3.5 billion, we'll say, industry. And in 2023, it was 12.5.
Jeez.
So, and in 2022, it was 10.5. So it is still growing. They're successful less, but they are getting way more.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit more targeted as well as asking for a lot more. They're doing more nefarious things.
It's, yep, when you're successful, you go for broke, you turn the screws.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. So now let's have that same kind of conversation and say, it's when, not if, you might not be able to afford to get attacked. And that's scary to me.
Yeah. Invest in disaster recovery plans and whatnot.
Well, we're, you know, we've been reviewing solutions, and now we're looking at what happens if a customer gets extorted.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, we're partnering with a company that will do data encryption for files at rest at the file level. We're seeing a lot of insurance companies say, do you do file level encryption? Why? Because if the data gets exfiltrated out,
it's still encrypted files. Yeah.
All they got is, so now you can go, you can call their bluff. Yeah. They got your files, sure. But now the data is already encrypted, so they can't do anything. It's kind of like, I ransom. No, you pay me, I'll give you this. And then I'll close up shop because I
know
pay
you.
Yeah, you can extort me by paying me. Which leads me to, I don't know how much of you've heard it. It was technically when we were recording this last one, but I didn't have a ton of details about it. Griff, did you hear about Change Healthcare?
I have not. I don't even know what that is. I've never heard of it.
They're kind of in the background a little bit there. And
it's a $3.5 billion company, so they're quite large, but they're healthcare technology.
They're owned by like Universal Healthcare Group and Optum, stuff like that. Pretty large, like basically like an infrastructure system for healthcare. Like there's an e-prescription service. It's also how a lot of doctors get paid, like reimbursed on health, like, hey, you have an insurance claim. This is the computer system that does that.
So anybody in the industry is pretty much going to know this right off the bat.
Yeah, if you're in medical, you very likely are affected by this and not in a great way, unfortunately. So February 21st, Change Healthcare began experiencing really weird issues. Took down pretty much their entire network. And over the course of the day, they did figure out, oh, this is a cyber incident. Mm-hmm. So then they have ties to Optum and they have ties to Universal Healthcare. Those network ties then got settled. They took all of the Change Healthcare services offline. Good sort of, you know, response there. Then they have to look and they have to figure out what's going on. Later on, probably about 2 or 3 days later, they finally fess up and say the Alpha Black Cap people were taking responsibility for the attack.
Really?
And that they did not know when they were going to have things up. They didn't know the extent. They were still working with it. They collaborated with security firm Mandiant, which, you know, is one of the big ones. I think we talked, I believe Google bought them, right? I think they're owned by Google.
Maybe, yeah.
But they are a cybersecurity researcher and sort of like analysis company. We've talked about them probably about a year ago, very similarly with the 3CX issues that happened in version 18. They were the ones that did the remediation for them. And so they're on the job once again here. March 8th, they were able to stand up a brand new instance of their prescription services. So think about this. You can't electronically prescribe.
Yeah.
You can't get You can't file claims. You can't get paid.
Yeah, are doctors getting paid or nurses getting paid? I mean,
that's the thing. Yeah. So if your doctor seems a little bit nervous or a little bit frustrated or pushy.
Could be because he's not getting paid.
He or she's not getting paid. It's not good. Not good. We're recording a little early. We do believe by about this time that you get this, we should see most services up and running. They were planning to get the payment system back up and running March 15th. And then on the 18th, medical claims, so new claims, would be able to be entered. So if you entered claims, you have no idea if those made it into the system.
Yeah.
And they aren't issuing payments off of those claims. So you're just sitting there.
Hmm.
I think the good news is this is happening at the beginning of the year, right? So there's a lot of people who are probably not meeting their deductibles yet. So there's the doctor's offices are probably having a lot of those, you know, that type of income. If you haven't met a deductible, you charge for the visit. But I mean, this is what we're going to be a solid month without this. And
oh God,
United Healthcare, Optum, they do have, if you are a medical facility that is affected by this, they do have like a, I'm going to call it like a loan system or whatever, that they are providing temporary assistance financially. And I'm guessing what they'll do is they'll evaluate it, but you can apply to get some funds from them to help your business in case you are affected by this. So definitely make sure you check that out. But hopefully, as this hits your ears, whenever that is, we should see some stability come back. Obviously, anything can happen and they pull back, right? But they are, as of March 1st, effectively, we're on the forward progression of restoring services. So the past few weeks, they have been in that process.
Wow, that's huge. That's pretty scary.
And we still have no idea, because they said they haven't completed the digital forensics yet, if any patient data is affected by this.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that could be awful. Nothing like getting all your medical history released to the public.
Yeah, it's tough. So feeling for people.
So every year, this company, Rival IQ, comes out with a social media industry benchmark report. And I got to say, I recommend looking at the 2024 version, which, you know, is obviously stuff about 2023 technically, but it's a lot of...
What gave it away? The fact that it is March?
But it's a lot of forecasting, too, based on last year's results and stuff. So highly recommend getting into that. It's actually quite interesting. Some of this is obviously going to change based on things that happen in the legal world, like if TikTok gets fully banned. But I did want to mention TikTok, because TikTok is coming out with another thing, man. You know, TikTok's like life is just stealing
other people's ideas
and stuff. Yeah.
But see, who haven't they stolen ideas from? I mean, the only thing they're not doing is text and photos. Text doesn't feel like their thing.
I think they tried to do text already.
Did they? Like like captions? Or but, yeah, I mean, comments? But it doesn't feel like their focus.
Well, photos is happening.
Oh, okay.
So they're challenging Instagram with TikTok photos. It is exactly what you think. But it is a separate app. It's not one that is built in just like they have been doing with these other upgrades, where it's like, you know, oh, let's widen our normal TikTok app to include whatever. This is TikTok photos. This is a separate app now, and it is going to be entirely an Instagram ripoff, which honestly, man, is probably going to do pretty well. I mean,
you've got a native user base. It's still considered one of the, I mean, I know from your benchmark report that you showed, they did kind of say that engagement on TikTok was down quite a bit, but it's still the number one.
Yeah, it's still the top. I mean, it's down a little bit, and it is a lot of like international stuff. TikTok photos might appeal to a wider audience that is just somewhere else.
Kind of like how WhatsApp is really not super popular in America,
but it's massive in Europe and Middle East. And yeah, so I'm pretty sure this will be a success. I don't know if I recommend like getting on it right away, that type of thing. I do recommend getting on Blue Sky, seeing if that's cool. They actually released a thing called Ozone, which is their customizable moderation tool. So you can kind of make your own little server and then like choose how moderation works.
So unlike Reddit, where you had to build your own moderation system, they just built one for you.
They just built one you can just kind of deploy and customize. And
I need to get on Blue Sky.
Blue Sky looks pretty good, man. It's getting cooler and cooler.
I need to get in there. I actually, was listening to our last podcast recently, and I was like, I forgot I need to get set up on Blue Sky. Yeah. And I was hoping I would be able to come to you today and be like, Griff, I did it. I finally did it. I'm on Blue Sky.
I don't think I've followed anybody on there, but I created an account and I've just been like utilizing what's public. So we had talked before about how you can choose what algorithm you want to subscribe to, if you will. Mm-hmm. But in reality, they've made it so that it's more of like, what feed do you want to look at? There's like a little bottom ribbon and you can say like, you know, people I'm following only, you know, what's new, like what's trending, you know, that type of thing. So it is pretty much what algorithm you want to look at, but it is a little bit more, I don't know, user friendly. It's not, you're not choosing like, I want to only see this specific level of RSS feed, whatever.
Right.
It's a lot nicer, a lot cleaner than what I expected it to be, which is a great thing. I love the fact that you can just see, you know, I want to only look at the people I follow right now.
Did Blue really Sky cool. start off, I'm going to ask a dumb question, but did Blue Sky start off as kind of like a response to Twitter?
Yeah, it's Jack Dorsey.
And it's kind of grown to be sort of like that replacement to Reddit almost?
Weirdly? Yeah. I mean, it's Jack Dorsey, you know, he's pioneer of social media with Twitter. So yeah. I think he probably liked a lot of the elements of that Reddit had, saw it was imploding. Started coming up with cool stuff to add
but
to his
new
Twitter clone.
But also saw that everybody wasn't happy with what the direction that Twitter's going.
Yeah, and he's got, it's Federation, man. The fact that you can make your own server and everything's kind of open source, it's sweet. So I'm excited to see it.
Yeah.
It's going to grow massively here soon, but I don't really know what direction yet. So.
But the question is, will it grow with the right demographics?
Yeah, I don't know. It could just be the people, you know, leaving Twitter, and that's the only audience you get. I don't know.
And all of the features seem to revolve a lot around, we'll say, nerdier types, like techie types.
Yep.
Will it be easy enough to use? Right? Like the thing with Twitter and X and Facebook, it's one platform. You just log in, you do it. Like, you know what I mean? I don't have to think about
this one. You could switch servers. You can make
Federation.
It.
Yeah. That's great. But then you're like, yeah, but I just want the content. Mm-hmm. So how do I actively find new content?
In the setup feature, it asks you if you wanted to do the default, you know, Blue Sky server.
Yeah.
So like, yeah,
you could do that.
If you don't understand that, you're probably just going to hit yes and then go through. But there is definitely a level of technical roadblock that might happen.
Yeah, it's great in theory, but will it fail because it's not self-authoritative?
Yeah.
Which is great for a lot of reasons, but it does create a technical barrier.
Yeah, I think so. So we'll get there. Some Google stuff, though. Google's doing some cool stuff with social media.
Who's Google?
Oh, it's just this little company, yeah.
It's a little startup.
Yeah.
Last
year, they added a feature where you could add your social media profiles to your business listing, which is kind of nice. You know, you can click the whatever. And now they're actually embedding recent posts into your social, like your business profile, like that little right tab that shows up if you search company. Cool. I actually kind of like that.
I do too.
That forces more engagement towards your social media and that type of thing. It allows people to see updates from your company right off the bat that you don't have to log into Google and post, which no one used.
The reality is, I mean, we still use blogs. That's very important as part of your marketing strategy. However, in terms of centralized frequent updates, we'll say like the RSS feeds didn't really exist.
Yeah.
Social media has kind of been the RSS aggregator.
Yeah, weirdly.
So to get the most up-to-date content, isn't really the blog. It's your social media accounts are more.
I'm not posting on our blog that we're closed Monday or something like that, you know, that this will show that obviously you're supposed to be updating your hours and stuff on the Google business profiles and stuff. But, you know, the example stands.
No, it makes sense.
They're also doing this weird change with ads where I think it's actually a good thing, but it's gotten some criticism. So Google Ads is going to automatically start pausing ad groups with low activity. And it sounds weird that they're just going to be putting, you know, an ad on pause that you're literally trying to pay for and that type of thing. But
it doesn't cause you to waste money.
It doesn't cause you to waste money. And this is actually focused largely on larger companies that are just putting an ad out there and trying to wide scale hit a whole bunch of audiences and not doing anything with
it.
Google's recognizing that as a point where we're not allowing smaller businesses, for example, or other people, advertisers.
Because you can outbid them on your pay-per-click or whatever by just a little bit and push them out.
Yep. So
it means nothing to you.
If it's getting low activity, Google's just going to be like, no, dude, this isn't making a good user experience for people. People are not wanting to see this ad. Let's show them another one that, you know, another business might actually care about.
That's two things that Google's doing that I agree
with. I actually liked that one, yeah. It has gotten some feedback, or, you know, backlash, because obviously I think those bigger companies are like, what the heck, man? Now I got to, like,
spend all this money.
Yeah. But in reality, it is just pausing it. You could go in there. You'll get a notification. You can just hit unpause, and then it'll go back to it, and it'll reset the tracker. So it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But it's a small little light.
But you need to be maintaining it, and somebody needs to go, okay.
And if someone's not.
Evaluate it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? If you really are just using it to push a company out, then you probably won't know, why are we doing bidding on that?
It is a weird change, because we thought we were looking at Google just only supporting enterprise stuff recently, but that actually kind of gave me the warm and fuzzies. So kind of nice. I did see also a report recently about how, this is more like kind of a fun article to read, more than like a, you know, full report, but it was an article about how small businesses rely on social media so heavily, and Meta went down a couple weeks ago now. And apparently it just hurt some small businesses and stuff. And obviously that makes sense, you know, when you have like an e-commerce shop, for example, and you're only, you know, pushing your advertising on Meta or something like that. But the idea, the whole topic of the post is really just about, like, social media should not be the place where you're doing everything, man. Have a website, have a backup plan, send people to the website from social media. That's the place you have full control. And we've said that a million times, but
I'm gonna play the advocate here, the devil's advocate of sorts, the small business advocate. You start your own business. I'm not sure what that would be, but you start your own business. Okay, ice cream shop. You start an ice cream shop, and don't have the skills that you have. Okay?
Yeah,
and I know this one's a hard one, but you don't know how to make a website.
Oh, ridiculous.
You don't know how to do email marketing. You don't know. But you are a generation that's grown up on social media.
Yep. Got a Facebook already.
And you know that your friends will help support you. You know that you can get some, you know, boots on the ground support just by doing shares and things like that. And how hard is it to do a post, because it's literally a text box? And do you want to add media?
Yep.
So I understand why this small company, your best practice is not wrong.
Oh, yeah.
You are 100% right, and this is why.
And the report covers why it's hurting so many small businesses, because it's your point of, this is the easiest entry-level way to make your business marketable online. And
I feel like businesses really should know more about leveraging their website. And, I mean, there's a lot of tools that allow you to do this, and yes, we've got some, and yes, Wix has some, and Squarespace. And
yeah, all those.
These are good investments, though. You really should be doing these things, because if you can make simple changes and make it a priority to make sure your website is up to date. I had a discussion with somebody just last night.
Oh, yeah?
And he's like, well, they do this. And I said, it hasn't been true in months. Well, it still says it on their website. I'm like, yeah, but you're expecting a company that's got three people, like it's a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
You're expecting them. They don't care about this because it's not what they care about.
They care about being around the restaurant.
But you don't understand, we're a technical world. You need to log in. Like, yeah. So you need to almost set a reminder that once a month you're reviewing it. And it's cumbersome, but that's why companies like Lighthouse, we have these services, right? Because we understand how important it is. You don't realize it. You could be losing customers because they can't find you, or the information's irrelevant. Or
yep.
Where you're like, oh, well, it's on Facebook. Okay. Find something on Facebook twice.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
If your business strategy, your marketing strategy is to use social media, find something on Facebook twice.
Yeah. To the feed, and then it goes away.
Because they've already served it to you.
Mm-hmm. It's marked as red, if you will. Yeah.
They're not going to show it to you twice. So it is a good lesson to learn about, like, I understand this is the lowest barrier to entry, but that doesn't make it the right barrier.
It's the first step. Yeah.
It's very much a good tool. Use it, start it, but make sure you have other avenues to communicate with your clients. And most importantly, make sure one of those avenues you have control over. And that's why a website's still important. That's why we talk about blogs and stuff. And
don't put all your eggs in the same basket. I mean, I guess many people don't know that, you know, the Messenger app, Instagram, and Facebook are all going to be run on the same servers. But hey, guess what? We found out that when they went down a couple weeks ago. Like, If you run your business up based on those three things and then, you know, your actual physical store, then you've got no digital presence at that point.
And during the Google section, when we were talking about the social media piece, you mentioned that we don't post 100% same content to all channels. It is somewhat customizable, but the important bits are replicated on our website, or we drive the important bits to clients,
right? Yeah.
To our website. Like, that's the bit. But you're posting content that's additive on each social media point. Some of it's links to news articles that we find that we curate. Sometimes it's just, hey, we're noticing this, or alerts, mm-hmm. or whatever. But generally, if it's something important to us as a business strategy, it links to our website.
Oh,
why?
Yeah.
Because we have control over that.
Yep.
You have the ability to control that experience, and yeah. that's critical. So, been a while, I think, since we've talked about Epic Games.
Epic Games was in a lawsuit for a long time with Apple.
They were trying to basically monetize outside of the App Store, which is a clear violation of the App Store rules. And
yeah.
the government kind of said, hey, you did agree to this. Like, we'll look into it. We understand what you're saying, but it was kind of upheld, but there was an asterisk next to it and all that. But you have to renew your developer account. And so Epic renewed their development account. And, you know, you have to sign the same agreements and everything. I kind of love this a little bit, but this is creating some tension, especially over in the EU, because now Apple is allowing you to download from your website apps, or will be. It's a ton of rules on it. Don't worry. If you're an app developer and you're listening to this, you probably won't be able to do it. But there's a ton of hoops, and it's only going to be for larger companies. But there's an application, what they call a notarization process, and you still technically have to communicate back to the App Store. But I bring all of that up to say Apple has decided to terminate the developer account for Epic Games. And the article that I read, the headline says it all. Calling it a threat to the iOS ecosystem.
Ooh.
Now, we know these guys, you mentioned, this has been a long-standing, what, 2 or 3 years now that we've been talking about this. Maybe even coming up on 4.
Yeah, it's been a long time. But it's all about their monetization.
And they're trying to get as much money as they possibly can. And yeah you get it. But Epic said that, hey, we're going to come to the table, and we agreed to the terms. We did everything we were supposed to do, right? But here's what I love. This is why they decided to terminate it. There is an Apple exec, Phil Schiller. I'm going to read his quote. In the past, Epic has entered into agreements with Apple and then broken them. They also testified that Epic deliberately violated Apple's rules to make a point and for financial gain. More recently, it was described that our DMA compliance is hot garbage, a horror show, and a devious new instance of malicious compliance. And you have complained about what you call junk fees and Apple taxes. Which admittedly, I've totally called it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. The 30% is a bit egregious.
The colorful criticism combined with past actions strongly suggests that Epic does not intend to follow the rules despite their agreement on paper.
Interesting.
Intentional breach could threaten the integrity of the iOS platform, as well as security and privacy of users.
Wow, just so, cutting them out then, yeah.
I like this drama. This tastes really good.
Yeah, this is some spicy drama.
All I'm going to say is, like, you go, girl, Apple. I kind of feel like I'm on their side on this one. I think everything that they're doing, I have an agreement with Epic Games on this in terms of Apple does sort of control and manipulate this ecosystem.
I mean, biggest tech company in the world.
Yeah. They're not wrong. And what is it, 20% is what they take out of your fees? When
30.
Is it 30? It's 30. Oh, you're right. Yeah. It is 30. That's substantial.
It's huge.
My credit card fees are like 2.5% to 3%. But Apple also has allowed companies like Prime and Amazon, right? Because technically, remember Amazon, you couldn't order through the app?
Yeah, because they...
Because they wanted 30%. And eventually they just said, listen, Android is... We're going to just move all development over because they're willing to play.
Yep.
And so finally Apple said, okay, we'll set up an agreement with you. You have... So there is these exceptions to the rules that they've made. However, can you fault Apple in their response? Like, if you're a business owner and your shady business practices held up.
Yeah, take out the fact that it's Epic and Apple, and then just look at it from like an objective standpoint. It is a problem if you have a client breaching contracts left and right.
And they sign a new contract, and what is the question that you're going to ask? Do you really intend to follow this, or are you just signing this?
Yeah.
Because how much money have they spent in fighting them in legal fees, Apple?
I don't even want to imagine, man. Oh.
Right? Going back and forth.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's just easier to say, bye, Felicia.
See you.
So I thought that was just, I mean, I don't know. I thought it was fascinating, like, more than the Apple car being dead and more than, like, the Vision not pro.
The Vision not pro.
being speculated. Like, this one was just, I was in it. And then just to hear an Apple exec be like, I'm calling you out. Like, it's like a diss track.
And I mean, Apple, this isn't a huge hit for Apple. It's not like this is their only, you know, egg in the basket here. They just released all of the new products that are coming out, and there's talk of there being a 20-inch foldable MacBook. Like,
so that'd be cool.
I mean, foldable. I know laptops foldable, but like the screen.
No, the screen is
the
foldable.
Screen.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's well within their right to cancel the developer account. I'm surprised they didn't do it sooner. Like, if you had a customer that was this, like, rough to deal with, you would do it. I have some respect for what Epic was trying to do, but if it was really such a problem, don't agree to something and then fight them on it.
Yeah.
Those are the terms that you signed, right?
Read the terms.
What you do is you go someplace else. But why won't they? Because they do need their mic. They need Apple more than Apple probably needs Epic.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was a big one, man. There's a lot there. I mean, from cybersecurity to marketing to
we got it all.
Weird
this
game
week.
News.
We're talking about AI. We're talking about games.
Game adaptations into TV shows.
I love that. This is a side note. I know in last episode I talked about how Biden his voice was used in AI.
Oh yeah, and he brought it up during the State of the Union.
He brought it up. You saw this. I laughed because I'm like, you know, there are. The Actors Guild, like a lot of the strikes and stuff that we had last year was over AI.
Yeah, it's a big issue.
And you're like, bro, literally, did you hear about this George Carlin comedy special that somebody used AI?
No.
Oh, it's garbage.
Really?
I'm going to quote Phil Schiller. It's hot garbage.
Gosh.
It was.
It's so easy, though. That's the problem. Everybody can do it.
Yeah, and it wasn't even the family didn't do it. So the position is there's some like AI comedy bot that does an impersonation of a comedy. And
they did with his
George
voice.
Carlin. They fed all of his content.
Yeah.
And it's actually how I think they won the injunction or were thinking they won the injunction is because they said, you used copyrighted materials to train him.
Yeah, there you
so
go.
It's not really an impersonation because you used actual copyrighted materials to train it.
You didn't act like, it's not,
it wasn't
not a parody.
Like, it's not a true parody, so it's not covered by that. But this is like a real problem that's kind of happened in media because they're saying, okay, well, what happens if, like, you do this movie and you want too much money and they just feed you into an AI? And now you can't, like, you should still get paid for that. And the studios didn't want to pay.
Man.
They were on strike for like, 7 or 8 months?
Yeah.
That was actually the biggest issue, is the studios didn't want to pay if they used AI.
That's ridiculous.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Lighthouse IT Solutions podcast. I'm glad you joined us today. If you get an opportunity, you know what I'm going to tell you. Make sure you check out the Hub, hub.lighthousesol.com. It's a great place for you, especially if you're a client, to see all kinds of resources. But even if you're not, we still have blogs and all of the past podcasts. Everything is there right there at your fingertips. You can check out their show notes for this.
Yeah.
You can listen to this episode again. Maybe you really liked our take on McDonald's sauce. You can listen to last week's episode, not last week's, we're bi-weekly, but you can listen to one that's 3 years old now. We've been doing this for almost 4. Pick one. Do whatever you want. It's all there. View the blogs. Stay up to date on what's going on here at Lighthouse. All kinds of great stuff. So I encourage you to check that out. LighthouseSOL.com/podcast takes you straight to the podcast list. But of course, if you just go to hub.lighthouseSOL.com, you got all of that. And again, if you're already working with us, you can click the sign in button, log right in, and you'll get a whole bunch of extra fun stuff right there. Well, while I ponder the implications of that and I decide that I need to stop mumbling, I'm going to say goodbye. So on behalf of Mr. Griffinball, I've been Mr. Matt Almadier, and that's another episode of the Lighthouse IT Solutions Podcast. See ya.